Hello and welcome to the Dotball Cricket Podcast. This is the cricket podcast that concentrates on South African cricket, both the Proteas and looking in depth at the domestic season in South Africa, which has just come to an end. It is my great pleasure to have with me two former South African internationals in left-arm spinner Paul Harris and all-rounder John Kent, both of whom are probably well-known too for their broadcasting work with SuperSport. And also a great pleasure to have with me statistician, author, broadcaster and general cricket guru, Andrew Sampson. We've just come off obviously a successful test series for the Proteas, South Africa against Bangladesh. South Africa winning 2-0, two very convincing wins. And I know Paul Harris is dying to talk about Keshav Maharaj and Simon Harmer, and John Kent is dying to talk about the Proteas finally overcoming their Kingsmead bogey. But shall we start with Andrew Sampson and maybe just a few of the statistical highlights from that series, Andrew? I know obviously it was mostly the Maharaj and Harmer show, but perhaps our batting was a little bit forgotten. South Africa had six guys who scored more than 100 runs in the series. Bangladesh just had two, and that perhaps also told a bit of a tale.
Yes, so especially I'm starting with the spinners. 29 wickets between the two of them in the series out of the 40 that South Africa took. 72.5% is the highest percentage of wickets taken by South African spinners in a test series since 1909-10. Those were the days with a quartet of googly bowlers. So it's certainly an unusual occurrence for South Africa to be spinning teams out at all at home, and especially a team from the subcontinent. The first test in Durban when South Africa bowled Bangladesh out for 53 in the second innings was the first time that South Africa had ever bowled a team out using only two bowlers of any description, never mind spinners. And they repeated the feat in the following test, which is really rather extraordinary.
Yeah, and it wasn't even on matting wickets, like I think the guys back in 1909. Paul, you would have loved to have bowled on matting wickets, no doubt, in your day. But Maharaj and Harmer, just for you, it must have been really special to see those two guys bowl so well in tandem.
It was. Let's first go with Harmer. I mean, you know, he's obviously batted his way back into the South African side through sheer weight of wicket taking. I think he's the highest first class wicket taker in the last few years in the world. So well done to him, firstly, and also how he sort of came back and set the tone in that first test, where I think he got the first four wickets, was remarkable and brilliant from him. And then secondly, I mean, Kesh has steadily improved his bowling over the last sort of two summers. Or 2 years, having said that. And you know, I'm just so glad finally he's getting a bit of success. He's been bowling really well, but just hasn't quite gone his way, especially at home. So it was great to see him getting the rewards for all his hard work. He bowled beautifully. He's not bowling as many bad balls as he did before. He's obviously got huge amounts of confidence in himself and in his ability and what he can do as a spin bowler. He's now become the most successful spin bowler since isolation. It's great to see. Going from strength to strength, it's going to be fun. And we don't want to get ahead of ourselves too much, but it'll be fun to see what happens the next time we go and sort of tour India or Pakistan or any of the subcontinental teams with these two spin bowlers. I mean, you know, hugely experienced, know their games. You know, one left, one right. Nowhere to hide, really.
Yeah, Paul, I know, unfortunately, during most of your Proteas time, you never had the benefit of having another frontline spinner to bowl with at the other end. But I guess it did happen at domestic level at times with Tabrai Shamsi probably mostly. But what does it mean for a spinner to have another spinner at the other end turning the ball the other way and just also creating a lot of pressure from the other end?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, I did it a lot with Imran Tahir when he was at the Titans. In fact, we played quite a few games in Benoni where only the two of us bowled. I remember actually him and I taking the new ball and then also taking the second new ball. I think we bowled out Free State. I think it was two overs into the second new ball. So, and, you know, it certainly did happen in first class cricket before with the Titans I know of. And bowling with Imran, I mean, we were so different, one being a leggy, one being sort of left-arm orthodox. It was great to feed off. And we did incredibly well, you know, bowling together. And I foresee the same thing happening with Kesh and Simon. And also, you know, guys just preparing sort of spinning wickets against us, they might think twice, you know, if this continues. As I said, we don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. As you know, I don't think the Bangladeshi batsmen covered themselves in glory with a bat. You know, you would imagine that an Indian top order would have played a lot better. Having said that, you know, you can only play who you, you know, who's put in front of you. And they certainly sort of really decimated the Bangladesh in their top order and bottom order, especially in the second innings, which is what you want to see. You know, Kesh, I think, would have been a bit frustrated in that first innings in Durban. You know, he didn't pick up a wicket. He bowled really well, bowled a lot of overs. You know, and watching your, you know, the guys just come back into the side, take wickets, that would have been a, you know, I wouldn't say stressful time for him because that position's his, but it would have been frustrating for him. And the way he bounced back in the second innings and then how he continued that on a wicket that I don't think there's been a wicket in South Africa's turned more than the one that turned in PE and bounce. But, you know, having, you know, we got our strategy spot on.
Yeah. Speaking about the wickets, John Kent, I thought the Kingsmead pitch was absolutely outstanding because it provided a bit of help for the spinners, but it also seamed, so the quick bowlers could get a bit of bounce, get a bit of assistance. There was decent bounce as well. John, just fantastic to see the Proteas win at Kingsmead. Andrew Sampson will no doubt have the exact figure, but I think it's probably their only third win there in their last 11 or 12 tests.
Yeah, they went in with a probably better attitude than previous times. Obviously, they didn't have their fast bowlers to blast them out in previous occasions, and maybe just seeing who else is around, we realise what a shortage we have of out and out quick bowlers. You have Lazard Williams, who is probably the quickest of the lot of those bowlers. You got Dwan Alfield at 125. You know, the guys weren't really cranking it up, to be honest, but like Paul was saying now, you can take our spinners, our two spinners, anywhere in the world, and they will be the better spinners on display majority of the time. To be honest, there's not many better of them than them in the world right now. So that's a massive plus for us. You're obviously disappointing. No one really, in talking about Durban and obviously Port Elizabeth wickets, it's a bit disappointing that no one managed to get to those three figures. Even Keshav sort of came in and swung for the hills and got a few lusty runs at a good rate. Yeah, that would also have been a bit of a special moment for him. Also getting a test 100, that'd be quite outstanding. Also the one instance as well when Keshav didn't get wickets and Harmer got some wickets, it was quite interesting to see when Keshav did pick up some wickets. He was pretty aggressive in his celebrations, and yeah, I'd love to know what he was thinking there, or who he was upset with, or what it looked like, a bit of frustration built up, but he got the wickets, and you know, the two of them are superb together. So, like, a huge plus, I think. A little bit of a worry from, I don't know, my perspective, I don't know about everyone else, but I'm just a little bit worried when those big quicks are missing of ours. We don't have many quick bowlers around, to be honest, other than them, which is a very concerning, I think.
Yeah, it certainly, I thought Lazard Williams was decent. Obviously, still has a lot to learn at that level. But as you say, the real pace men, the real fast bowlers, we're a bit over-reliant on, I guess, Rabada, Norkia, those guys. But, John, one of the things that struck me as well from the series was just how disappointing Bangladesh were in terms of how they played in the ODI series, where they had tremendous self-belief and played with confidence and seemed to have good plans and really took it to the Proteas. In the test series, they were just really quite meek. As soon as a few decisions went against them, as soon as the pressure was on, they really just capitulated. And I have to ask, do they have the right captain in the test side? Tamim Iqbal led in the ODIs, and Mominul Haq, apart from just scoring 13 runs in four innings in the test series, I didn't really see him as being much of an inspirational figure for his team.
Yeah, I agree with you. Tamim has been the rock there for their team for many years. And yeah, it's a bit subnominal's been only a single format real player for them in Test cricket. He's been probably one of their more successful over the years. But yeah, they're pretty meek. You're right, they didn't really show much backbone. You know, they really just gave it away in the end. Those last couple of wickets in that Test match in PE, they slog sweeping balls straight down deep mid wicket, hitting the ball straight up in the air. Yeah, they didn't show much fight, which is from their perspective is very worrying when you're playing away from home and going down in that fashion.
Paul, John has mentioned the backup pace bowlers who came in and I guess did a moderate sort of job. But of the other newcomers, the guys filling in for the IPL players, how did you feel they went, Paul, the likes of Rickardson, especially?
Yeah, look, I think it was. I think he might be slightly disappointed. He got some good opportunities to bat Rickleton, and he got some runs, but he would have liked to have got a big one. You know, stamp your authority as soon as you get a chance. You don't know when you're going to get another one. You know, you got a few guys that'll come back into that Test squad, and you know, guys that are going to have to move out. So you'll be slightly disappointed. You know, having given the opportunity, I think he got out reverse sweeping once as well. Easy shot, but you know, you got to take your chances when you. You know, when you're a newcomer on the side, you've got to take your chances. And then sort of as far as the seamers go, look, I don't think they got the best opportunity to bowl, you know, especially in the second innings where we used just the two bowlers and our spinners did so well. But certainly there is a bit of a glaring gap between, you know, the seamers that played this series and the sort of three, four guns that are away. It is a slight worry, I agree with John, you know, but if you take sort of four seamers, three seamers away from any Test team, you know, you're probably not going to get the same level. So I don't think we should be too harsh, but certainly something to look into if we have one or two injuries. You know, having the spinners there might save us for a while, and we might get to a place where we, you know, a wicket where, you know, you can't, where it doesn't spin and it's got a bit of seam and swing, and you're going to need the seamers to step up. So slight worry. But as I said, when the, you know, those three, four gun seamers come back, we'll have a bit of a selection issue, that's for sure. Sort of what balance of side do we have? Do we play the all-rounder? Maybe another disappointing performance by the all-rounder. And, you know, Vion Mulder, I'm not sure if that is the answer to our all-rounder issue. Do we play an out-and-out batter there and back our bowlers? Do we play an extra bowler? You know, with Simon Harmer and Keshav batting so well, does that make up an extra batter? So these are all the questions you're going to have to sort of answer. But I think for Bouch and the coaching staff, it's probably, you know, good headaches to have.
Yeah, well, that brings me exactly to what I actually wanted to discuss next, which was looking at the series coming up, which is a tour to England and then a tour to Australia. And in both tours, there could be situations where you maybe only want to play one spinner, but especially England in late summer, I guess we can bank on being able to play two spinners. But then with the IPL guys returning and, of course, with targets always being a factor we've got to consider in Proteus teams, Simon Harmer's future, how does he ensure he gets a fairly solid place in the starting 11? Can he bat number 7? That's the key for me. And you, how do you see that going forward?
Well, can he bat number 7 is a good question. I can't see South Africa playing two spinners at all in England or Australia. So I would think it's unlikely that Harmer would actually get a run in either of those, to be honest. They probably keep Mulder potentially as the all-rounder, even though his Test career has been pretty disappointing so far. I can't see them playing two spinners in England or Australia at any point, really. But the all-rounder thing is the other interesting side of it is because of Wim Mulder's failures, there is a kind of theory that between Harmer, Maharaj and Marco Jansen, they can make up enough runs between 7, 8 and 9 as you might normally expect between 7, 8 and 9 because they're all pretty good number 8s or number 9s, if that's what you want to call them.
Yeah, I quite like that theory. I must say, Andrew, late summer in England, plus with all of Harmer's experience of taking hundreds of wickets for Essex, John Kent, do you agree that Harmer might not get a game in England? How do we fit him in?
Yeah, I think I like what Andrew said about Jansen. I think he's probably the answer for us in that position if we're only going to play one spinner. But as the summer goes on, Paul will know it becomes drier, more abrasive, and, you know, we can probably make that happen. You just got to say, well, who would be more threatening to face in England? Would it be a Milder type of bowler, or would it be a Harmer as the second spinner? And you got to say, well, you know, probably Harmer, to be honest with you. If they get much of a muchness with the runs, you know, maybe that's not a bad option.
Paul, your views on this?
Look, I slightly agree and disagree. It depends on conditions. You know, if you've got, you know, you're playing at Lord's, for example, and it's cloudy on day one, the chance of you playing two spinners is going to be close to zero. But if you're going to Trent Bridge, or if you're going to Birmingham, or you're going somewhere where it gets a bit flatter, then certainly is an option. The good news is there is the option. You're going to Australia, you know, you're playing in Sydney, yes, you would get to play two spinners. Playing, you know, sort of in Perth, maybe not. So you have to look at the conditions. The good news now is we actually have the option to do it, whereas before we never had the option. So is Simon Harmer going to get an out-and-out position in that team where he plays every game? I think the answer there is no. I think it's going to be a bit of an in-out situation. But I certainly am for having the, you know, sort of maybe not him at seven, maybe Jansen at seven, you know, Maharaj at eight, him at nine. I mean, that's sort of got to be better than Mulder. I mean, I'm not trying to be ugly, but I just don't think Test cricket is. I think sort of first class cricket might be his ceiling. I'm hoping one day he'll prove me horribly wrong, but I just don't see him good enough at batting or bowling to really compete against the top sides at the highest level, and that's Test cricket. So I'm all for playing, whether it's more bowlers and seamers or whether it's more spinners. I'm with John. I think that if you're going to compare the all-rounder position in Mulder to, you know, another spinner, I'm playing another spinner every time.
I think all four of us agree that perhaps going the route of cobbling together the runs, the likes of Maharaj, Rabada, Harmer, Jansen, can score together and saying that's our all-rounder is probably the best way to go. The three tests in England, just by the way, will be at Lord's, the first test. Traditionally, a pretty seamer-friendly ground. That's from August 17th to 21st. The series then goes to Old Trafford in Manchester for the second test, and then the third test at the Oval. And that third test starts on September 8th. So perhaps by then, and maybe even for the second test, we'll see the possibility of South Africa fielding two spinners. Gentlemen, let's move on to the domestic game. And South Africa's season, of course, just came to an end recently. And before I think we chat about that, let's get the actual position from Andrew Sampson in terms of those promotion relegation standings. Of course, who goes down, who comes up will only be decided after the end of next season. But, Andrew, who's sitting pretty and who's looking in trouble for next season?
Yes, obviously with the two seasons, the first time they've implemented it, they've done it over two seasons. So it gives everyone a second chance after the season. But the Titans are pretty comfortable. In fact, I don't think there's any chance of them being relegated. They've got 35 promotion relegation points after the season, which is well ahead of the Lions on 23. And then you go down to the other side of the Division 1. The Knights are in trouble, having only got 4 points, while the Dolphins and the Dragons are next worst on 10 each. And I suppose Warriors and Western Province are also still in a bit of danger, having only got 14 each. So if either or any one of those sides has a really poor season next season, they could put themselves in danger of relegation as well. And in the second division, Northern Cape are at the top with 25 points. They've only got the two competitions in the second division because the T20 they play in their knockout competition as opposed to their own division. And then the good old KwaZulu-Natal Inland Tuskers playing at the Oval in Maritzburg. Yay!
Maritzburg!
Second. So they're the two top teams. And the Southwestern Districts have done quite well as well. They're on 17 points, so a good season. In 2022-23 could see them being promoted possibly as well.
Yeah, it was obviously a tremendous season for the Northern Titans. They could have won all three trophies, in fact, because they won the four-day competition and were in the final of both white ball competitions. And I think the last time a domestic sweep happened was back in the days of the Mean Machine, Transvaal. But Paul Harris, a former Titans man, obviously delighted with the season for Northerns. But do they have a bit of a problem when it comes to winning finals?
I don't think so. They are the most successful franchise out there, so no, it's not franchise anymore. But no, I think that the other teams played well in the finals. I watched one of them, and the other team played better. I think they won the four-day stuff, which is the key to a sort of good setup and a good team and a good you know, good structures. You know, I'm obviously slightly biased, a strong, hardened supporter of Northerns and Titans cricket. But they do. They've got very good structures there. You know, they've got a great CEO. They've got a very good coach. Mundler has done very well. There'll be a bit of pressure off him now. He's won a trophy, which is great for him. Can free him up a little bit. And they just tend to find ways. You know, you can lose finals. It happens from time to time. I know that, you know, people would like to read into that, including you, John, but that's fine. I mean, I'm not going to take it too personally. You know, I know everyone hates it when the Titans win, except for me. But that's what happens with great organizations, is people don't either love them or hate them. And it's not surprising that South Africa are playing so well because the Titans are.
Excellent stuff, Paul. John Kent, we'll give you a go to respond to that. Just your feelings of the domestic season that's just been, and I guess also what's happened to the KZN Dolphins, because they were clearly one of the top franchises in the last couple of seasons, but a troubled campaign, a troubled summer for them this time round.
Yeah, I think they, the Dolphins, yeah, they drew most of their games, and I think they just took the, not the easy way out, but didn't really set some declarations. And the only game they won was because Lions were trying to create a victory at Kingsmead, and Ackerman got 140-odd. So, yeah, their four-day wasn't great. Their 2020, I think Miller covered a few for them, and then the momentum, or it's the one-day cup. Yeah, they were dreadful. I don't know what, I don't know really. They just haven't looked like a setup that's gelled together, because in the one day cup is the last 3 years I think they've made finals, and that's probably their best format, and that was just terrible. They didn't manage to put any sort of game together. But saying that, like, yeah, you know, what Paul mentioned with Mandler, it was good for him to get that trophy under the belt, and it was a couple of tough seasons before this where they hadn't made a white ball final for a little while, but producing good players. They've given Makanya the captaincy, and he seems to be enjoying it and scoring runs. Brunt's had a good season as a four-day leader. So, like Paul said, the first-class trophy is massive, and really good to see them come out on top there. They've put a good season together, and that's important. You know, the Lions also right up there again in the points tally, down into the log to the Northern Cape, and the Tuskers have been pretty far ahead in comparison to the rest. But the guys like the Mpumalanga, the team in Mpopo, they've produced some wins. And a team like Border, I think they're under some big pressure there. They didn't really have a good season. I haven't seen them really making any sort of signings of any note so far. And the likes of Eastern's also not a great campaign. So Limpopo and Mpumalanga were getting the upper hand on Eastern's and the likes of Border. And then the Southwestern Districts, I think, yeah, they were the surprise package. They got some good players. Les Duploy played there as well, did really well, finished the season strongly. So they are an outside chance. But at the moment, the Tuskers, Northern Cape with Mark Charlton, who's formerly from Northern's, excellent coach, you know, and obviously producing players for Division One. I suppose that's a tricky one, because some players might get an offer in Division One, and he's got to say, you know, let them go and go to greener pastures.
Let's just wrap it up with perhaps Andrew from the domestic season. Were there any guys who particularly impressed you at the domestic level who've had really outstanding summers all round?
Not really, to be honest. there wasn't really a standout kind of player. I wouldn't think that comes to mind immediately. That's kind of now demanding national selection. You know, some players obviously made progress, but and others maybe didn't make as much progress as you would like to have. I still don't know why Yanoman Milan hasn't played Test cricket, though.
I suppose he can't get a place in the side. That's the
well, he averages 49 in first class cricket, which seems to, which used to be good enough to get you a Test run.
Over how many seasons? That's like two seasons of 4-day cricket, eh?
No, he's played about 4 or 5 seasons.
Okay. Has he averaged 49 in all of them?
He averages 49 in all first class cricket, yes. He's got 12 hundreds, a couple of double hundreds. He's done well enough in ODIs, and he still can't get a game in Test cricket. I don't understand. He doesn't even get in the squad, which I really
His brother's
understand.
Done better.
Yes. Yeah.
His brother's a bit older, yeah. though. So.
I don't care much.
Yeah, Yanoman Milan, certainly one of the big talents in South African cricket. Paul, who were some of the guys who maybe caught your eye at domestic level?
Look, I think the Stubbs is a seriously, seriously good player. You know, he's someone for me that's got X factor. I'm trying to look at, you know, guys around the circuit that have got X factor, and he, to me, seems like that kind of player. You know, someone that can smack the ball out the ground. You know, I'd like to see more of him in the first class game before sort of anything remotely close to Test cricket, but certainly in white ball cricket, he must be close. You know, I know, you know, as South Africans, we don't tend to, you know, blood our guys young, but, you know, I would like to see him come through sooner rather than later, and Brevis. I mean, we've seen what he's done, you know, sort of at the IPL now. You know, I'm a firm believer, we don't just hand out caps, but I do believe that when there's something special, you know, you need to blood it as quickly as possible. There's certain players that I think would thrive under, you know, that sort of pressure, and certain players that might wilt. I think that those two are the type of players that would thrive, you know, given some senior players around them. I think that they would really thrive at that level. So, you know, those two guys for me are the standout sort of young players coming through that I, you know, I'll turn my TV on to watch them bat. Let's put it that way. And then, you know, I've got to say it, the parting shot is the two spinners have sort of made my summer. You know, sitting there watching two spinners open the bowling at Kingsmead, which was notoriously a fast bowler's paradise. There might be one or two fast bowlers turning in their grave. You know, choosing that, that happened. And for me, it was hugely, you know, satisfying to see it. And also to see Keshav Maharaj doing so well. You know, it's no secret I've got a great relationship with him, and seeing the fact that he actually has got rewards for all the hard work is, you know, has really made it special to watch. So I'm looking forward to the next Test match, I can assure you.
Indeed, it was a truly memorable end to the summer, and a great summer too, if we think about beating India in Tests and an ODI series as well. So much to be happy about. John Kent, just to finish off with you, Tristan Stubbs, he has now been named in the SAA T20 squad that will be playing in Zimbabwe later this month. Him and Devout Brevis, when do we throw them at an international level?
Yeah, I think Stubbs has got to be putting some pressure on that middle order, top to middle order finishing role. Miller's in form, which is great. Him and Miller finishing off, we're worried about the finishes after Miller. There was the likes of Clarkson's, there's been the likes of, you know, Miller in and out. So I think the likes of a Stubbs and Miller, right hand, left hand, you know, batting say 5 and 6 for our side, I think that's pretty impressive. But just take a quick step back. I think in domestic cricket, I think the Simmons, I think Paul's knows Carl Simmons pretty well. He got, I think he was the second top first class wicket taker with 33 after Harmer. So I think that was quite an outstanding effort from him at Western Province. And then in the One Day Cup, I think Libba got 300s in a row towards the end of that series. I know Warriors didn't do particularly well, but obviously he was in the runs in that respect.
Yeah, Vian Luba also in that SAA T20 squad. Perhaps surprisingly not in the 50-over SAA squad, but then the top order is a bit loaded there with people like Reza Hendricks and the like. So that's where we will end it for today's, for this episode of the Dot Ball Cricket Podcast. Thank you very much to Paul and John and Andrew for their time and wonderful thoughts on South African cricket. And don't forget that you can subscribe to this podcast, please do that. And you can also follow us on Twitter on @.ballpodcast. We'd be delighted to hear from you. Thanks very much for listening to us, and until next time, goodbye.